Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be going through my Q3 2021 Tesla earnings forecast, and we'll walk through kind of all the logic behind there and some of the key things to watch for from earnings, some of the key takeaways that we may have, just to really get us set for when Tesla does report numbers next Wednesday after market close. That'll be October 20th. Just a reminder for audio listeners, this will be spreadsheet intensive, so I will put the link to the video down in the description. And then just one thing before we get started. I did want to take a quick look back at the Q2 numbers. So I know I just came in a little bit high on Q3 production and delivery numbers, so people may have a recency bias, thinking that my numbers may come in a little bit high just from that. But just as a reminder to review the second quarter, if we take a quick look at these here, I was relatively high among prognosticators, I guess, for Q2, and still I was quite short of Tesla's actual results. So I had estimated GAAP earnings of 64 cents a share. Tesla came in at $1.02. So I just wanted to kind of point that out because of the Q2 or the Q3 delivery and production numbers, my forecast there being high. People may be attaching that to this forecast as well. So that being said, let's look at the numbers here. So you can see I've got the last 12 months, those four quarters, just to see the historicals. Then I've got my Q3 forecast here. Unfortunately, we don't have the analyst consensus yet, and I haven't taken the time to look up what that is. I think it's probably like around, I don't know, $1.55, I think I saw last, for non-GAAP EPS. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when I get through my numbers, but we should get those company compiled analyst consensus next week sometime, probably Monday, and we can revisit this when we do get those numbers. But either way, you'll find out soon I am ahead of consensus. So let's start off with the top section here, which is revenues. And let me just quick take a look at something here and make sure everything is going smoothly, which I think it is. All right, so we'll take a look at the revenue section here. And let me just go ahead and unhide those. So where I'm at for sales, total revenue right now, I'm at $14.6 billion, which again, unfortunately, I don't have the consensus. I do think I'm a little bit higher than consensus. How I have that breaking down is about $12.8 billion for automotive, $750 million for energy, and then just over $1 billion for services and others. So you can see that is up 68% year over year versus deliveries up 73%. So I do have the average selling price falling a little bit. That is due to a couple things in terms of mostly what's driving that down year over year is the lack of Model S and Model X, or the lower amount of Model S and Model X. So that's what I've got for revenues. I'm just going to kind of walk through some key points here on revenue and average selling price, because I think my numbers are going to come in quite a bit higher for automotive revenue than what the consensus is going to be. So I just wanted to kind of walk through the headwinds and the tailwinds for each of these and explain some of my numbers there. So in terms of the average selling price, ASP, there are a lot of tailwinds this quarter, which means things that are boosting the ASP. So we have price increases hitting. Remember, Tesla in the first half of the year, you know, they started off the year kind of dropping prices and then suddenly switched gears and really started increasing prices pretty consistently from like March to June, essentially. Because of Tesla's delivery lag time, though, and I'm talking for the US right now, because of Tesla's delivery lag time, not all of those price increases, most of those price increases didn't actually end up affecting Q2 deliveries. They're going to affect Q3 deliveries. So I think a lot of people are underestimating that tailwind. And that's a big factor in terms of, I think, what's driving my automotive revenue higher. I'm basically adding about $1,500 to the average selling price for Model 3 and Model Y from the US. Now that doesn't apply for international deliveries, but it is a factor for, let's say, you know, 40% or so of Tesla's deliveries this quarter. We also, this quarter, have more Model Y and Model S sales. So the mix here, you can see, I plotted it out, in Q2, Model 3 made up 59% of Tesla's total vehicle deliveries. In Q3, that's dropping now to 50%. We have 46% then going to Model Y. That's up 600 basis points from Q2. And then, of course, Model S now starting to ramp up with about 9,500 deliveries there, I think. That comprised 4% of the total versus just 1% in Q1. So that mix shift is going to raise the average selling price as well. Another thing here that a lot of people probably aren't factoring in, and to be honest, I wasn't factoring in Q2. And if I do flip back to my Q2 numbers, I was really low on automotive revenue, excluding regulatory credits. I was at, you know, $9.4 billion ex regulatory credits. Tesla came in more like 9.8, 9.9. So I was like 5, 6% low on that. And I think what was driving that, and I was kind of scratching my head as I was reviewing those numbers, I think what drove that is China Model 3, which I think is the lowest margin, lowest revenue vehicle for Tesla in terms of anything that they could deliver. I think that's the lowest ASP car that they've got. What I'm saying there is I'm factoring in mix too, because I think the percentage of standard range vehicles sold in China are probably higher. So considering mix, I think that the high amount of China Model 3 sales in Q1 drove ASP down. Then when we shifted into Q2, Tesla exported a lot more from China as they switched that over to being an export hub, and naturally that pulled Chinese deliveries of the Model 3 down. So in Q2, it went from 28% in Q1 down to 16% of total sales in Q2 being those China Model 3s. In Q3, that same thing continues, and now it drops to 11% from 16%. So if we look Q1 now to Q3, it's completely different. We're at almost, you know, 10% versus 30% of the total being those China Model 3s from earlier this year. And that's driving, that should be really good for margin and for revenue. So that's a factor that I think a lot of people are missing, especially Wall Street analysts. We'll see though. Then we also have European Model Y. So Tesla obviously now started shipping those in Q3 versus they didn't really have any of those, I don't think, in Q2, if my memory serves me correctly. So that's going to raise the average selling price over what Tesla was getting in China. And I think it's also going to raise the margin too. So that should be a pretty big tailwind as well. Trim mix. So this is what I'm saying here is that I think Tesla is prioritizing more long range and performance vehicles ahead of standard range vehicles as demand has kind of gotten out of control here over the last 6 months. I think Tesla is shifting, prioritizing those higher average selling price vehicles. And I think that's going to be a big tailwind this quarter too, that it isn't really apparent until we get the numbers what's happening with that trim mix. We kind of just have to guess and go off of, you know, what we're seeing online. The counter points to those points that I just made, the headwinds for average selling price and in turn margins this quarter, is we did have the introduction of the standard range Model Y. So that's only in China, and really those deliveries were only happening, I believe, in September. So I think it's going to be a decent chunk of the mix, but it's not like the entire quarter had standard range Model Ys there in China. I think they started delivering in August or September. So I was thinking maybe half of them, half of the Shanghai made standard range Model Ys, half the Shanghai made Model Ys could be standard range. Maybe a little bit less than that is kind of how I approach that forecast. And then finally, the last headwind, I just put it on here. I don't really think it's actually worth considering too much in the forecast, but just kind of as a note, Tesla did introduce the full self-driving subscription. So that may have shifted some people from opting for it up front to just taking the subscription. And while that would benefit margins over the long term, that's going to be an immediate hit because you don't have that $10,000 option on the initial purchase. So we've got quite a lot there, but as you can see, if I, you know, I have a more, much more intensive model behind the scenes here, but this is just the recap sheet. But all these things mixed out in my model to end up with average selling price being about $1,400 above Q2. And most of that was driven by Model S. The other things kind of ended up washing out. And then just the Model S actually being a decent chunk this time kind of boosted it up. So I actually feel pretty good about those. And again, I think there are things in there that people are not necessarily appreciating. So I don't want to belabor those points too much. Let's move on. Oh, I guess let's just talk quick about service and energy. So energy I do have down. Last quarter it came in at about $800 million. This quarter I have it to $744 million. So down, you know, a little bit quarter over quarter. Still up 28% year over year. The reason for that is because Tesla did note in the Q2 earnings report that they had recognized a lot of Tesla Energy projects that quarter, and they did also note that that can fluctuate just due to how those end up being recognized. I think that was probably a little bit of a warning for Q3 to just not expect the exact same numbers again. And we've seen the lumpiness before too. You can see here in Q4, the numbers, unfortunately I don't have Q3 last year on there, but Q4, we saw a really big spike to 1.6 gigawatt hours, and then it fell the next quarter in Q1 to 0.4 gigawatt hours. So that caused a lot of forecasts to be off just because of the lumpiness there. And then in Q2, shot back up. So I'm kind of just sticking in the middle, somewhere around 800 megawatt hours. But I really wouldn't be surprised anywhere between, you know, half a gigawatt and 1.5 gigawatt hours. So taking it a little bit conservative there, coming out at 750 million-ish for energy. And then for service and others, I usually just take this as a percent of automotive revenue. And generally, it's somewhere around 10%. And as automotive grows, automotive revenue, normal automotive revenue grows, the services and others in as a comparison tend to fall a little bit. So I have it around, I think, 8.3, 8.4% of total automotive revenues this quarter. Tesla should benefit from, you know, more service as the fleet grows and more trade-in vehicles as they sell more new vehicles. And that's really what's going to drive this number up over time. All right, so let's get into profitability here. And this is, I mean, you guys know I've been excited about Q3 for a long time, and this is a big part of it. We'll just unhide the numbers here. So, let me actually show both of these. That'll make more sense. So, I won't bury the lead. I'm showing automotive gross margins here of 30%. And I didn't try to hit 30%. That's what it came out at. But that would be up, you know, 160 basis points from Q2. And I'm showing automotive gross margin excluding regulatory credits of 28.3%. So up about 250 basis points from Q2. So even though we know we've heard, you know, about Tesla, well, here, I'll just show the same thing we've got for cost of goods sold here. So driving cost of goods sold down, we've got Tesla delivering 20% more vehicles this quarter. As they deliver more vehicles, the depreciation and amortization is amortized over more vehicles. So it's just a smaller amount of each vehicle. You just also gain production efficiencies. It takes less labor hours. All these sort of tailwinds come from producing more vehicles with the same amount of resources. And that's going to lower your cost of goods sold per each vehicle. I again think that's something that people are not really under, you know, really appreciating necessarily for Q3. As we have, you know, mostly heard about materials price increases, a lot of other things like that, you know, flying parts. Elon mentioned that in the shareholder meeting that Tesla was doing a lot of that. We had heard from a leaked email from Elon earlier in the quarter that Tesla had been doing installing parts after production. I'm not sure if that falls in cost of goods sold or if that falls in SG&A, but that is going to be a headwind for Q3 certainly. And then, as I mentioned, materials prices. I tend not to think that that's going to be a huge impact though, because materials prices have been high pretty much all year, and I think Tesla's probably got long-term contracts. So I don't think that that is going to be too big of an influencing factor. I think it's more about supply constraints when we think about what's happening in the supply chain rather than price increases. But at the same time, I do think Elon noted also at the shareholder meeting just that, you know, they had raised the prices as a response to increasing costs. I tend not to necessarily fully believe that until the numbers come through though. So I'm going to stick with, you know, what I'm showing here. So bottom line for cost of goods sold, as I said, I'm showing automotive gross margin X credits, which, I mean, sort of one of the whole reasons we go through this forecast is to try to understand that number. I've spoken about that many times. That's one of the first, probably the first thing that I look at when we get the report, is that automotive gross margin X credits, because that's the most indicative of where Tesla's costs are at. And Tesla's costs are indicative of what Tesla can do in the future, whether that means capturing a lot of margin or that means lowering their selling prices to drive more volume if they end up needing to do that. So that's a huge important factor for us, that automotive gross margin X credits, and I have that growing 250 basis points quarter over quarter. So it's a pretty big increase, but at the same time, it's not as big as Q2 to Q from Q1. That was a 380 basis point increase. A basis point, if you're not familiar, that's just 1/100 of a percent. So 250 would be 2.5 percentage points. So that's the increase that I have there, and that would be up 470 basis points from Q3's 23.7% last year. So as these margins go up, you can just see Tesla starting to continuing to get further leverage of the scale that they're achieving. All right, so regulatory credits, I didn't really talk too much about, probably should mention that. I'm only at 300 million. That would be the lowest in probably a couple of years. Trying to be conservative here because we did see a big drop in Q1 to Q2. So we could see a bounce back and maybe it spikes back up to half a billion, or we could be at the beginning of a downtrend because we know at least like Stellantis, Fiat Chrysler have said that they don't need the credits from Tesla. So I have a lot of uncertainty there. When there's uncertainty, I think probably a little bit better to be conservative. So I'm going with a hopefully conservative number there of 300 million. If that were higher, obviously that would drive up, you know, total automotive gross margin, total gross margin as well. But yeah, we'll see. So, the other thing I want to say on credits just real quick is that there were some reports of the Chinese regulatory credit market going to auction at some point in Q3. Me and someone that listens did a little bit of research on that, and it looks like that has been recognized over a longer period of time. So my understanding is that 400 million that was supposed to be energy credits from this China auction, my understanding is that those have kind of already been recognized or are recognized over a longer period of time. So I don't expect that to hit all in this quarter. Again, that could be wrong, but that's just my understanding, and that's what I'm forecasting at this point. Okay, so let's get into operating expenses then. I wanted to talk about energy and services just real quick. I thought my notes would help me organize this a little bit better mentally, but not quite. Anyway, energy profit. So I do have this being slightly positive. We've seen this kind of all over the map so far in the last 12 months. You can see that last year it was, 3.5%, kind of dropped off in Q4, really, really dropped off in Q1. And then we saw Tesla react and they changed the solar roof prices. They raised them by 50 to 100%. And that really seemed to curtail the drop in margins that we had been seeing for that 6 months last year and early this year. So I anticipate that continues. I think some of those projects, maybe those price changes, maybe didn't quite hit in Q2. But I think that'll probably be a bigger benefit in Q3. Conversely to that, just because we have less revenue, we've got less scale. So that's pulling things down, counteracting a little bit for what I assume will be improving solar roof margins. That being said, those things mixed out for me and my forecast to be somewhere around a 4% gross margin. Not super material, but obviously it can end up swaying things, $150 million or so, depending on where those margins come in relative to historicals. So just a small gross margin there. And then services and others. So this one's exciting because this always has been a huge drain on Tesla's profitability. So you'd get your automotive gross margin coming in at, 25% or so, and then your total gross margin coming in way lower because energy mixes in lower, and then services and others actually has been a negative margin business forever. So we're slowly seeing that turn, and I'm really hoping that this is the quarter that it flips over to being positive gross margin. I think Tesla's going to be able to get good resale on used cars as there just is a lot of demand right now. I think if I remember correctly, used car prices, average selling prices increased like 27% in September or something like that. So Tesla should have some pretty good tailwinds there in terms of the services and others to flip that into being profitable this quarter. It's still going to pull the total mix down because it's still low profitability, but at least it's not a loss. So I'm excited about that. Let's get into operating expenses then. So these ones are, this is a little bit simpler than the situations we've been in previous quarters primarily because Elon Musk's compensation plan is getting less crazy. There's only, if memory serves me correctly, somewhere around like $500 million of that left. And that should be recognized over the next year or so. So what I have here for Elon's compensation, which falls into selling, general, and administration expenses, is $170 million being recognized, which is pretty close to what was recognized in Q2. This will depend if Tesla deems the operational milestone of, I think it's $12 billion of EBITDA projected. Doesn't matter. If they hit that next milestone, then they'll recognize probably somewhere around this level. And I think that based on the numbers that I have, which we'll look at in a second, I think they'll hit that and recognize it. So it should come in somewhere around this. Maybe could come in at like 270 as well, depending on if they recognize one more. But we shouldn't have anything super crazy like we have had in the past. Hopefully a little bit more confidence in that number. And what's happening is that we're seeing this decline in CEO compensation, which again, that falls into SG&A, so it's an operating expense. We're seeing that decline as revenues rise. So, you know, last year, Q3, let's just always get myself into trouble doing this, but let's do some quick math here. So we had $338 million CEO compensation. I'm just trying to figure out the percentage of that to last year's revenues. Yeah, so it's about 3.8% of total revenue last year. And this year, if my forecasts are correct, which directionally they should be, you know, close enough to use this, it's about 1.2% this year. So that's just an extra 2.7% that falls right into operating margin just from Elon Musk's compensation plan starting to dwindle down. And people really don't get that, you know? People think that stock-based compensation is only like a GAAP versus non-GAAP thing, which it is, but it also falls into SG&A, so it's kind of like a double hit. But that's been accounting for, you know, a big part of this increase that we've seen in Tesla's operating margin this year. Anyway, so I've got $170 million there, and then I've got other stock compensation pretty close to what it was in Q2. Oh no. I think I messed something up. So in Q2 it was $299 million. Here in Q3 I have it at $300 million. Basically just holding non-CEO stock-based compensation similar, which it should, somewhere in that ballpark. So those two together, if you back out stock-based compensation, then I'm left with $525 million for non-stock-based compensation SG&A. I know a lot of acronyms here, so I've got that written out here in the notes. So SG&A excluding stock-based compensation, $525 million is what I'm projecting versus $499 million in Q2. Maybe that goes up a little bit more if some of these, you know, post-production part installations do fall into OpEx instead. We'll just have to see on that, but it doesn't look like much of an increase here, but I do have a little bit of an increase in SG&A as well. That being said, you know, it's not anywhere close to what Tesla's increasing in terms of revenue. Revenue up, you know, what, 20-30% quarter over quarter, and SG&A basically flat. So that's that operating leverage that I love. R&D, so this one should be pretty simple. You know, it's been right around $500 million last few quarters. I don't anticipate that changing too much. Kind of did the average of the last two. We did see a bit of a spike there in Q1. Tesla, I think, attributed that a little bit to the Model S and X refresh. So I might even be a little bit high here. I think Q2 might have had some of that too. I wouldn't be surprised if this actually came in, you know, $550 million, $500 million, something like that, which would actually then benefit my operating income, maybe driving this up 0.5% or so. Bitcoin impairment, so there shouldn't be any this quarter. Bitcoin's been doing much better than it was in Q2, so there shouldn't be anything to worry about there, which will be nice, unless Tesla ended up selling, in which case we get a negative impairment like in Q1, which would benefit Tesla's income. I don't expect that, though. I think Tesla's holding their Bitcoin. So operating expenses, just the two there, $1.6 billion. Taking the operating expenses away from your total gross profit leaves us our operating income, about $2.3 billion, up about $1 billion quarter over quarter, up about $1.5 billion from last year, 181%, leaving an operating margin of 15.6%, which that's really good. If you don't look at a lot of financial statements, you might not fully understand how good that is, but I think GM and Ford are, I don't know, like 7% or something like that, obviously at a much higher level of volume than Tesla's at. So it's really good, and it's a lot, it's being driven a lot less by regulatory credits than in the past. So yes, Tesla last year had a 9% operating margin in Q3, but if you look at it, half of that was from regulatory credits, you know, about $400 million of regulatory credits versus $809 million of operating income, so about half. Here in Q3, under my forecast, which, you know, could definitely be wrong, probably, obviously it will be wrong in some way, but under this forecast, my, you know, regulatory credits are only making up, what, 10%, 15%, 10 to 15% of the profits here, or of the operating income. So it's just becoming much, much less important than it was in the past, which is, you know, last quarter we saw Tesla deliver their first profit without needing to include regulatory credits, if you don't consider the tax things, otherwise it happened earlier. But now it's just even becoming almost, you know, a footnote at this point compared to the, just the raw power of Tesla's business. Sorry about that one. All right, so anyway, bottom line, operating margin up 460 basis points quarter over quarter from the 11% in Q2. Again, basically they're fixed, you know, not fixed, but their operational costs are, should be pretty stable, maybe slightly improving. But you've got an extra $1 billion in profit, an extra, you know, $2.6 billion in revenue on the same operating expenses, essentially. You know, those are essentially the same number there. So it's really exciting to see that. You guys know I love the operating leverage. All right, let's get into these bottom line numbers. I know everyone loves these the most. I love automotive gross margin X credits the most, but well, look at these. So earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, I'm at $3.4 billion, which is just, it's getting nutty now. It's $2.5 billion last quarter. I'm at $3.4 billion here. I've got non-GAAP net income, $2.4 billion. You know, stock-based compensation we talked about, leaving me, the only difference between non-GAAP net income and GAAP net income is stock-based compensation. Again, that's why I talked a little bit about it being double counted, because stock-based compensation actually comes out already. Anyway, doesn't matter. GAAP net income I have at $2 billion, $1,956,000,000. Earnings per share. So bottom line, I'm at $2.16. And again, I think the analyst consensus somewhere is, you know, probably, I'm guessing by the time we get earnings, it'll probably be like $1.60 or so. So I'm way, way out there. I mean, you guys know I've been excited for Q3 for a long time. As I said, I was high on the production side. Deliveries were a little bit closer, but yeah, Q2 I was under quite a bit for forecasting. So we'll see. This is just my forecast. I don't try to adjust it based on being over in deliveries or anything like that. It's just how the numbers come out and how they're looking to me, but that's where I'm at. So one thing I will add to this, let me just show these quickly and maybe mention this. So again, just to point out the operating leverage, revenue up 66% year over year, earnings per share up 542%. You know, it's use a small base, so that's what happens, but it just shows the kind of growth that Tesla's experiencing right now. Even if you just look at operating income, which has a little bit less of those impacts, up 181% on revenue up 66%. Free cash flow. So I've stopped forecasting this because honestly I don't really care about it. It's Tesla's already proven that they have incredible cash flow, so it's really just a matter of forecasting changes in working capital, forecasting their capital expenditures. Not worth the time to me. It should be somewhere in, I don't know, like the $2 billion range, maybe. Yeah, just kind of a ballpark, maybe $1 billion to $2 billion. But should be strong. Free cash flow, and Tesla should continue to, well, they are paying down some debt this quarter, they announced last quarter, so the cash balance might stay relatively stable, but yeah, they're generating a lot of cash, no question about that. So let me just unhide this last section. So On the income line, so the forecasted earnings per share that I've got here, so I'm at $1.74 for GAAP earnings per share. Last 4 quarters then, trailing 12 months, GAAP earnings per share would be under my forecast, $3.39 at a share price of $820, which is what we're pretty close to right now. The price to earnings would be dropping, I think it's right around 450 right now. It'd be dropping to 242x from where it is. So you can see that, yeah, we're at $1.92 trailing 12 months earnings. This quarter now replaces last year's Q3, bumps it up by $1.50 all the way to 339. So that's exciting. And then if you look forward, we've got $1.74 here in Q3. Tesla should pretty easily be able to hit those type of earnings per share numbers over the next 3 quarters on average. Maybe they take a dip at some point just because of seasonality or whatever, ramping up factories. All those things will influence earnings per share. But if you just annualize Q3, you're at a forward PE of 118x on that $1.74. That's, I think, 696 or something like that. And this is GAAP earnings per share. So it's, it really is that bottom line. So yeah, just my note there. Operating leverage continues to develop. You guys know I love it. And bonus. So Model S and X, still not ramped up. We had deliveries of about 9,000, 9,500, whatever, Model S in Q3. And we're still hopefully seeing numbers in this ballpark. Even if Tesla misses this by quite a bit, we should still see much stronger numbers than we saw in Q2. And this is before, Model S and X in combination are basically at not even half ramped up yet, maybe 40% ramped up. So those are really going to start to. In my model, I only have Model S margin being at like 19%, 18%, I think. So it's not anything crazy at this point. Once that actually gets ramped up and Tesla can start, hitting the production rates that the equipment is designed for and that the labor force is designed for, I think they can hit a 30% gross margin on that. And they're going to have, 25,000 deliveries a quarter, maybe more. Elon has said maybe more. So, yeah, it's going to be another, 16,000 or whatever per quarter at $100,000, $1.6 billion. Yeah, one point. Yeah. Think that's right. And if that's a 30% gross margin, then you've got doing some more fun math on the fly here. $500 million contributing. That probably falls right down to total gross profit. So it's growing. And then FSD not fully recognized. Tesla's only recognizing about half of FSD right now. And then Berlin and Texas, just a twinkle in the spreadsheet's eye at this point, right? It's not even, it's maybe impacting the cost like a little bit right now, but the spreadsheet doesn't even capture any of that stuff yet. And next year, fast forward to Q3 next year, definitely will. So we're at exciting times. And yeah, I'm definitely excited for the earnings report. One thing that I will say here, so I know that my number here is going to influence like the perception of Tesla's results. So if Tesla comes in and they report $2 a share, don't be disappointed with that because that's still going to be a huge beat. Again, I'm not trying to like, I kind of feel bad like going through my forecast because like for deliveries and production, obviously I was higher in my forecast than what Tesla delivered, but Tesla still crushed consensus estimates. Obviously, we've seen the stock price increase by, I don't know, like 7%, 6% since then. So don't let my forecasts and what I think is going to happen color your view of how good or bad the results are when we get them. If Tesla misses this, it doesn't inherently mean it's a disappointment. I might feel a little bit disappointed because obviously I want Tesla to hit my forecast and exceed my forecast. But that's just my own personal thing. It's not anything to do with how I feel about the business. So hopefully that helps just clarify that. And whenever I put my numbers out too, I'm sure it'll influence, other forecasts, whether it's on Twitter or, wherever. So just try to keep that in mind. And again, next week, once we get the analyst consensus, we'll just throw that back in the spreadsheet and take a quick look at that too, just to see how my numbers compare. So with that, I am gonna just, if people have questions, I'm gonna just stick around for a little bit here and hopefully answer a couple if people do have any. So I'll give you guys a couple of seconds to do that, and let me just go through and take a look at. Looks like there's a couple super chats in here already, so I want to make sure I can get to those if I can. So bear with me. Thanks, AlexMax. John, thank you. Appreciate that, as usual. All right. Let's see. This is... Oh, put the wrong one up. Peter says, you and the TMC Investors Forum are the best sources for Tesla/Tesla anywhere. Keep up the great work. When would you predict Tesla to become the most valuable publicly traded company in the world? Ooh, you guys know I don't like those hard timeline predictions. I think it will happen. I was just saying this to a group of friends, I think last week, that they don't really follow Tesla. Said that I would be shocked if Tesla does not become the most valuable company in the world. And they were a little bit shocked by that. I'm sure none of you are, but it was kind of funny. I don't know. You kind of have to do forecasts for other companies too. I think for Tesla to become the biggest company, they probably have to hit like $3.5 trillion, which, yeah, I'll probably bite my tongue on that. I don't want to get anyone, you know, overly excited, which I guess that probably does it in and of itself, but the numbers are coming along nicely. I think within 5 years, it's definitely a possibility. And, you know, could be sooner. Just getting through these questions. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. Steven, thank you. Thank you, John. Ian, thank you. Excuse me. Team JG here saying, keep up the great work, Rob. Any guess as to when Australia will start getting Model Ys? If you're in Australia, you're probably following that a lot closer than I am, unfortunately. To me, I mean, you guys know I worry a lot more about production than deliveries, so I tend not to follow the individual markets and timelines there too closely. Unfortunately, can't really give much insight on that. I would think probably within like the next 6 months, now that Tesla's got it, you know, pretty well ramped, but they might work through a lot of the left-hand drive deliveries. And once they get a slot for right-hand drive, maybe that opens up, maybe in Q1 or something. Thank you, Roland. And let's see, we got James here. I see more up than down arrows in your cost of goods sold impact notes. What makes you think the efficiencies will outweigh the cost pressures, price cuts, and unfavorable mix? So it's a really good question. Yes, I do have more up arrows on the cost of goods sold than down arrows, but I think the volume is, oh, and I didn't even mention the radar removal, but I think the volume is going to outweigh these. And mostly what I think here is that I think a lot of this stuff is constant. Not quite constant, but I think Tesla's been dealing with stuff like this in the supply chain and logistically for the entire year, right? Like, we've been hearing about chip shortages for at least 9 months now. And in the Q1 call, Elon had said that, you know, this is like the most difficult supply chain challenge period of time that they've ever had. And that was 6 months ago, and Tesla's, you know, they had extra costs at that point in time. They had, $200 million of expenses for the Model S and X in Q1. In Q2, they said that dropped down to a slight loss, but that's still a loss. Now this quarter, again, I'm projecting a 19% gross margin on Model S now that it is ramped up. Not quite to full capacity, but to a pretty decent amount. That's a huge factor. I mean, that alone is probably offsetting anything to do with flying parts around. And then I don't think this production stuff is going to be too expensive, because those employees are likely working anyway. So it's probably already, you know, part of what Tesla's doing, and labor is a relatively small part of Tesla's costs, I think. So, and then materials, as I mentioned, I think Tesla's probably got longer term contracts, so I don't anticipate huge changes there. But again, I could definitely be wrong on those things. I just think that the volume is overwhelmingly going to outweigh that, because We've got the Model S ramping. We've got Model 3 continuing to ramp. We've also got Model Y. Shanghai Model Y production doubled this quarter. That's like a huge, huge factor. So when you've got all those things combined, and then even if cost of goods are going up, I still have my average selling price. You know, look at all these up arrows here. There's a lot of stuff going on here that's driving the average selling price up. And if costs even then just stay steady, like that's another $1,400 a car. Obviously, the costs are going to go up because some of that's driven by Model S, which is going to have a higher cost of goods sold. But everything else is kind of driving, like all these things, except for the Model S, should be working to basically drive costs down. I guess maybe not mix, but yeah, I just think there's I just think there's a lot of things that are weighing in the direction of positive improvement in gross margin from where we were at in Q2, which again, a lot of the same challenges in Q2 and Q1 that existed this quarter. So if we're using that as a benchmark, I think there's build here as Tesla delivered 40,000 more vehicles. Like that's so many more vehicles. I mean, we saw from Q1 to Q2, we saw how much margin improved with Tesla only delivering, you know, 16,000 more vehicles. Here we've got 2.5 times that, and I'm projecting a smaller gross margin improvement. And we've got the Model S improving. So it's like, I see a lot of reasons to be excited about gross margin, and maybe I'm too optimistic. We'll see, but yeah, there's a lot working in the favor there. The other thing too is that Tesla in Q2 was kind of shifting around, like export versus like Fremont versus Shanghai. And as Tesla started exporting more from Shanghai, I think they're able to capture a much better margin out of Shanghai. So I think that's a tailwind as well. And then maybe also saves them money in terms of shipping, because China might be cheaper to ship from to Europe than from the US. So that could be another tailwind there as well. All right, that's a great question though. Thank you, Renaissance Surfer, appreciate that. Thank you, Carm. Ooh, I'll butcher that one. But thank you, appreciate it. And then Spirits here asking, can you talk about why one might use GAAP earnings per share to calculate price to earnings versus non-GAAP earnings per share? I do it because that's just what's going to show up on every website. So if you go to Google and you look at the price to earnings, it's GAAP earnings per share. If you go to Yahoo Finance, it's GAAP earnings per share. That's just the standard. And that's what GAAP is supposed to be, standardized, right? Because every company is going to have different adjustments, GAAP to non-GAAP, or they can. So Tesla's super straightforward. It's just stock-based compensation. But yeah, that's why you see it expressed in GAAP earnings per share. So yes, you could say, okay, the trailing 12 months is $5.34 under this forecast for me. So 820 divided by 5.24, it'd give you a non-GAAP price to earnings of 156, but then you're not comparing apples to apples with other price to earnings ratios for other companies, because those are going to be GAAP basis. So it's just, that's the level playing field that everyone's going to be using. All right, I'm just going to take one other quick look through my notes here and make sure I didn't forget any points here. And then we can wrap it up. I don't think I saw any other questions in there. So, yeah. All right, that's where we'll wrap it up then, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, we're at 43 minutes. Yeah, that went longer than I thought. Okay, we'll wrap it up. But as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, October 15th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.